Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Jill Robbins. Later, you will hear The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County by Mark Twain on American Stories. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
In the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico, more than 300,000 homes have no official address. This is because across many parts of the island, street names or numbers do not exist. This has long been a problem in the city of Caguas, near Puerto Rico's capital, San Juan. Firefighters in the city cheered when they recently received new maps that included rural neighborhoods. In the past, firefighters and others said they sometimes had to depend on taxi drivers for directions during emergencies. But the lack of street names and numbers has long been a problem for the whole U.S. territory, where internet map services are known to fail. To get around the problem, people have learned to use different objects and landmarks to help them reach their travel goals. For example, directions could involve a mango tree, a store, a park, or a red farmhouse. It is even a problem in cities. In one area of the capital, some people look for a life-size Bigfoot doll sitting outside a building to help them find their way to a nearby hospital. In Puerto Rico, it is not unusual to hear something like, "Turn right at kilometer 58 and make a left after a large hole. If you go past the big breadfruit tree, you've gone too far." Even the country's famous Oso Blanco prison is still used as a landmark for giving directions, even though the buildings were destroyed long ago. The lack of addresses has made getting lost an acceptable and sometimes fun part of island life for some. But the coronavirus crisis, combined with recent natural disasters, have persuaded officials to seek new solutions to the problem. With up to 60% of homes in some areas lacking an address, emergency workers cannot find people quickly to bring basic supplies or provide needed medical care. "If you're not on a map, you don't exist," said Raul Rios, a former manager at the U.S. Postal Service. Rios now leads ICASA PR, a nonprofit group that aims to standardize addresses across the island. Puerto Rico's 78 localities and many government agencies still use separate databases that use different names for the same streets. They can also list the same addresses in different ways, such as 1013 or 10-13. "It's like the Tower of Babel," Rios said. 4 years ago, a young boy died in San Juan because it took an emergency medical vehicle 15 minutes to find his home in an area that did not have a standardized address, said Nazario Lugo. He is the president of Puerto Rico's Association of Emergency Responders. At the time of the incident, he led the city's emergency services. He said the mother could not go outside to flag down emergency workers because she was giving medical aid to her son while speaking with a 911 operator on the phone. As in other cities, officials in Caguas want to avoid such tragedies. Over the past decade, more than 100 roads have been named for the first time. But there are many more that need identities, and the naming process is not always easy, said Carmen Diaz, the city's planning director. For example, street names have to be completely unique, and they are limited to 28 letters and numbers. To help neighborhoods come up with ideas, Diaz provided books on Puerto Rican plants and animals. She also brought works by local writers. Diaz even suggested the name of the song Calma by Puerto Rican pop singer Pedro Capo. Diaz told the Associated Press, "The use of landmarks to give people directions is not a long-term solution. They've already changed the color of that pink house or cut down that tree," she said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Robert Mullen is walking the whole length of the northeastern state of Vermont and painting what he sees along the way. So far, Mullen has walked over 300 kilometers on the Long Trail, what Vermont calls America's oldest long-distance path. Recently, he had only 5 kilometers to go before he could meet his wife and father for a break and supplies. It was raining, but he kept dry with his special clothing and equipment as he walked down the trail. The leaves on the trees were showing their autumn colors of orange and yellow. He carried walking sticks and a large blue bag on his back. Inside his bag were his painting supplies. Mullen is a 64-year-old wildlife and wilderness artist. He is in the middle of hiking the Long Trail, which stretches 440 kilometers. The path runs from Vermont's border with Canada to the Massachusetts state line. During his trip, Mullen has been making art. He paints the things he sees. He told the Associated Press that his experience on the trail has brought him a sense of hope about the country. "I'll be painting from this trip for a long time," he said during a recent break from walking. Mullen has done many wilderness boat trips in Alaska and Canada in the past. This year, he had planned to boat in the Northwest Territories of Canada. But then the coronavirus pandemic hit. Canada's border remains closed to Americans. As a result, Mullen decided to walk the full length of the Long Trail. He also decided to raise money with his art. The Vermont Wildlife Coalition and the Green Mountain Club, which takes care of the Long Trail, will receive the money he earns. Mullen was able to fulfill his plan to hike a set distance and then paint a painting on the first day on the trail. He got to a shelter at around 4 p.m., painted a piece of art, cooked a meal, and went to bed, he said. But the trail soon got difficult for him. He admitted he had not trained enough, which slowed his speed. "I mean, I was really suffering," he said. He left his painting kit with his wife temporarily so he could carry less weight, but he did not give up. As he continued, he gained strength and got back his painting supplies. At times, he said the beauty around him took his breath away. His wife, Bonnie Roll, meets up with him every 5 days to resupply him with food. Along the way, Mullen has met many hikers who are either walking the Appalachian Trail from Georgia to Maine, or, like himself, Vermont's Long Trail. The hikers share shelters for the night or talk to each other on the trail. "You get these ephemeral friendships," he said, of the connections he made with strangers along the way. Ephemeral means lasting for a very short time. The hikers take care of one another. They share equipment and help fix what is broken. When two hikers were low on fuel on a recent night, another hiker loaned them a fuel canister, Mullen said. People who are called trail angels leave water at road crossings and other places for hikers.
Today we answer a question from Ahmed in Iraq. He writes, "Why do we have some silent letters in English? Like these words, right, no, half, hide. So tell me, why should we write them, although we don't pronounce them? Thank you." Dear Ahmed, that is a great question. Like many of the unusual things about English, the answer is tied to history. Three of the reasons for the silent letters are changes in the language, borrowing words or terms from other languages, and simplification of words. If you pay close attention, you will find my answer to your second question, why should we write them? The first reason is that language changes over time, and as people move from place to place. The English language has been written for over 10 centuries. We all know the way speakers of English pronounce words has changed over the years. However, the spelling of many of those words has not changed. About 400 years ago, people said the W sound or W at the beginning of your first example, right. In the northeast of Scotland, you may still hear the sound V at the beginning of the word. You asked about the word hide. That has a silent E because at one time there were two syllables or separate parts to the word. In Middle English, one might say hida. This word was part of a big change in the way people speak English. It came along between the years 1400 and 1700 and is called the Great Vowel Shift. The vowels, sounds you make with an open mouth, began to change. Hida became hide. After that change, English speakers kept writing words with the silent E to show that the words have a long vowel sound within the word. Another reason for silent letters is that English has borrowed words from many other languages. Words that came from Greek may start with the letters PH, but we say them with an F sound, F, as in physical. Scholars decided to write them in the Greek way to show their roots. You can imagine that people want to make the language they speak simpler. That is true with pronunciation, but until today, there have been few major changes to the spelling of English words. 2 centuries ago, Noah Webster tried to change American spelling in his dictionary. He is the reason Americans spell color without the letter U, and spell jail as J-A-I-L, not G-A-O-L. Ahmed, the second word you asked about, no, came from an old German word. In Old English and in Old German, the K sound was heard at the beginning. But to make it simpler, people started to say the N at the beginning. Today, we write the word no as K-N-O-W to show that it is different from the word spelled N-O or no. The same is true for all other words that begin with the letters K-N. And that's Ask a Teacher for this week. I'm Jill Robbins.
Our story is called The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County. It was written by Mark Twain. Here is Shep O'Neill with the story.
A friend of mine in the East asked me to visit old Simon Wheeler to ask about my friend's friend, Leonidas W. Smiley. I did as my friend asked me to do, and this story is the result. I found Simon Wheeler sleeping by the stove in the ruined mining camp of Angels. I saw that he was fat and had no hair and had a gentle and simple look upon his peaceful face. He woke up and gave me good day. I told him a friend had asked me to find out about a friend named Leonidas W. Smiley, who he heard was at one time living in Angel's Camp. I added that if Mr. Wheeler could tell me anything about this Leonidas W. Smiley, I would feel a great responsibility to him. Simon Wheeler forced me into a corner with his chair and began telling me this long story. He never smiled, he never frowned, but all through the endless story there was a feeling of great seriousness and honesty. This showed me plainly that he thought the heroes of the story were men of great intelligence. I let him go on in his own way and never stopped him once. This is the story Simon Wheeler told.
Leonidas W. Blur. Well, there was a man here once by the name of Jim Smiley in the winter of 1849, or maybe it was the spring of 1850. Anyway, he was the strangest man. He was always making money on anything that turned up, if he could get anybody to try to make money on the other side. And if he could not do that, he would change sides. And he was lucky, uncommon lucky. He most always was a winner. If there was a dog fight, he would try to win money on it. If there was a cat fight, he would take the risk. If there was a chicken fight, he would try to win money on it. Why, if there was two birds sitting on a fence, he would want you to decide which one would fly first so he could win money. Lots of the boys here have seen Nat Smiley and can tell you about him. Why, it did not matter to him. He would try to make money on anything. He was the most unusual man. Parson Walker's wife was very sick once for a long time, and it seemed as if they were not going to save her. But one morning he come in, and Smiley asked him how his wife was, and he said she was better, thank God. And Smiley, before he thought, says, Well, I risk my money she will not get well. And Smiley had a little small dog. To look at the dog, you would think he was not worth anything but to sit around and look mean and look for a chance to steal something. But as soon as there was money, he was a different dog. Another dog might attack and throw him around two or three times. Then, all of a sudden, Smiley's dog would grab that other dog by his back leg and hang on till the man said it was over. Smiley always come out the winner on that dog, at least until he found a dog once that did not have any back legs. The dog's legs had been cut off in a machine. Well, the fighting continued long enough, and the money was gone. Then, when Smiley's dog come to make a grab the other dog's back legs, he saw in a minute how there was a problem. The other dog was going to win, and Smiley's dog looked surprised and did not try to win the fight anymore. He gave Smiley a look that said he was sorry for fighting a dog that did not have any back legs for him to hold, which he needed to win the fight. Then Smiley's dog walked away, laid down, and died. He was a good dog, and would have made a name for himself if he had lived, for he had intelligence. It always makes me feel sorry when I think of that last fight of his and the way it turned out. Well, this Smiley had rats and chickens and cats and all of them kind of things. You could not get anything for him to risk money on, but he would match you. He caught a frog one day and took him home and said he was going to educate the frog. And so he never done nothing for 3 months but sit in his backyard and teach that frog to jump. And you bet you he did teach him, too. He would give him a little hit from behind, and the next minute you would see that frog dancing in the air and then come down all on his feet and all right, like a cat. Smiley got him so the frog was catching flies, and he would catch one of those insects every time. Smiley said all a frog wanted was education, and he could do almost anything. And I believe him. Why, I have seen him set Dan'l Webster down here on this floe, Dan'l Webster was the name of the frog, and sing out, "Flies, Dan'l, flies!" And quicker than you could shut your eyes, that frog would jump straight up and catch a fly off the table. Then he would fall down on the floor again, like a ball of dirt, and start rubbing the side of his head with his back foot, as if he had no idea he had been doing any more than any frog might do. You never seen a frog so honest and simple as he was, for all he was so skilled. And when it come to jumping, he could get over more ground in one jump than any animal of his kind that you ever saw. Smiley was very proud of his frog, and people who had traveled and been everywhere all said he was better than any frog they had ever seen. Well, one day, a stranger came in and says to Smiley, "What might be that you have got in the box?" And Smiley says, "It's only just a frog." And the man took it and looked at it careful and turned it round this way and that and says, "So it is." "Well, what is he good for?" "Well," Smiley says, easy and careless, He can outjump any frog in Calaveras County. The man took the box again and took another long look and gave it back to Smiley and says, "I don't see anything about that frog that is any better than any other frog." "Maybe you don't," Smiley says. "Maybe you understand frogs, and maybe you don't. Anyways, I will risk $40 and bet you that he can jump farther than any frog in Calaveras County." And the man studied a minute. "Well, I'm only a stranger here, and I do not have a frog. But if I had a frog, I would risk my money on it." And then Smiley says, "That's all right. If you will hold my box a minute, I will go and get you a frog." And so the man took the box and put up his $40 and sat down to wait. He sat there a long time, thinking and thinking. Then he got the frog out of the box. He filled its mouth full of bullets used to kill small birds. Then he put the frog on the floor. Now, Smiley had caught another frog and gave it to the man and said, "Now sit him next to Dan'l, and I will give the word." Then Smiley says, "One, two, three, go." And Smiley and the other man touched the frogs. The new frog jumped. Dan'l just lifted up his body, but could not move at all. He was planted like a building. Smiley was very surprised and angry, too, but he did not know what the problem was. The other man took the money and started away, and when he was going out the door, he looked back and said, "Well, I don't see anything about that frog that is any better than any other frog." Smiley stood looking down at Dan'l a long time, and at last says, "I wonder what in the nation happened to that frog. I wonder if there's something wrong with him." And he picked up Dan'l and turned him upside down, and out came a whole lot of bullets. And Smiley was the angriest man. He set the frog down and took out after that man, but he never caught him. Now, Simon Wheeler heard his name called and got up to see what was wanted. He told me to wait, but I did not think that more stories about Jim Smiley would give me any more information about Leonidas W. Smiley, and so I started to walk away. At the door, I met Mr. Wheeler returning, and he started talking again. "Well, this here Smiley had a yellow cow with one eye and no tail. However, lacking both time and interest, I did not wait to hear about the cow. I just left."
You have heard the American story, The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County. Your storyteller was Shep O'Neill. The producer was LaJuan Davis. This story was written by Mark Twain and adapted into Special English by Karen Leggett.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.